Case number 59166, Clark County versus Citizens Outreach. Ms. Nielsen for the appellant, Ms. Moore for the appellant, and Mr. Parker for the respondents. Ready to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. Paul Moore with McCracken, Stubman & Holsberry for appellant, Southern Nevada Building and Construction Trades Council. Let me begin. I'm going to take about 15 minutes of our time. Ms. Nielsen will take the remainder of the time. We'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
And this is a 60-minute argument, my colleagues.
Thank you, Your Honor. And let me begin by touching on the mootness issue that the respondents have raised several weeks ago in a motion to dismiss this appeal, before then turning to the merits of this case. As our briefs set forth, this appeal is not moot for several reasons. Respondents claim that because the county on September 20th of last year rebid the project without a project labor agreement, that this case is moot and that this court should not address the merits of it. That's wrong for several reasons. First, as we point out in our brief, construction on this project has barely commenced. There's been some demolition work that's been done, but the actual construction is scheduled to go on for a year. So this particular phase of the project is not completed. The second reason is that even if, for some reason, the court were to conclude that by bidding out the project, the appeal became moot, this case falls squarely within this court's precedent on the capable of repetition yet evading review exception to the mootness doctrine. And as your honors know, that exception holds that where there is a case that is presents issues that are likely to arise again, and where it is a type of case where those issues will not be able to be fully litigated, that this court will hear matters even after they become technically moot. This case is a quintessential case, if this court were to find that the appeal is technically moot, of one that the court should hear. And the reason is that the very same issues that are presented to this court are not only likely to arise, they will arise on the next phase of this project.
Is that argument problematic, given the rule in Associated Builders and Contractors versus Southern Nevada Water Authority that directs the courts to examine project labor agreements on a case-by-case basis and to consider a variety of factors with respect to each? If the next phase is to be the subject of a PLA, then wouldn't the court examine the various factors that Judge Weiss did in this instance in the context of that project labor agreement, and thus the exception on which you rely for mootness isn't applicable?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the standard that applies means that that exception to the mootness doctrine does not apply here for several reasons. First, the second phase of this project will present the same issues as arose before the district court here. We're not talking about an entirely separate project with some different governmental agency. We're talking about the same North Tower renovation project.
Well, the ruling in this case focused on Judge Weiss's view about the fairness or favoritism factor in a provision in the agreement that dealt with seven non-union Corps employees and their use. That's an issue that would seem to fluctuate depending upon the terms of the PLA a year from now or some other period of time, or the project itself. Even the cases that are discussed at some length in Associated Builders from New Jersey and New York call for a case-by-case examination. So wouldn't the one area that Judge Weiss addressed be subject to a reassessment depending upon what the nature of the project is and the nature of the bidding that occurs at that time?
Your Honor, there were three provisions that Judge Weiss believed were unfair to bidders, and on that basis determined that they violated the competitive bidding statutes.
They all focused around this one core provision.
Your Honor, there were actually three provisions. One was the core employees provision, which permits non-union contractors to bring seven core employees of theirs onto a project for each craft that they're employing. The second provision was the PLA's requirement that employees on the project be referred out through a hiring hall, another very important provision of the PLA. And the third was a provision requiring a payment into joint labor management benefit programs to ensure that workers on the project enjoy benefits while they're on the project. Now, all three of those provisions are central. They're core provisions of the PLA. But there's a further issue.
Well, they're core provisions of this PLA. They're not necessarily core provisions of other PLAs in other jurisdictions. I guess what is the rule that you would expect this court to enter in this case that would address the exception to the mootness doctrine?
Your Honor, these provisions are not just, they're not idiosyncratic to this particular PLA. As we explain in our briefs, these are the same provisions that this court reviewed in the SNWA case. They're part of that PLA. These provisions are standard provisions in PLA, and they're ones that my client, the building trades, will insist be part of the PLA on the second phase. There's a second issue here as well, Your Honor, which is that the standard that was applied by the district court here, a fairness to bidders standard, leaves a huge amount of uncertainty, both for the county and for other government agencies about what other provisions might be deemed unfair. We submit that the fairness to bidders standards that the district court adopted is totally at odds with this court's jurisprudence, with the Gulf Oil case, with SNWA itself, which made clear that the sole question under the competitive bidding statutes is, does this bidding specification benefit the taxpayers? And of course, in this case, the district court found that this PLA benefits Clark County's taxpayers. So we have another issue here, which is a standard that is applied by the district court on this PLA, creating a large amount of uncertainty, and this is highlighted in the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority's amicus brief, the SNWA's amicus brief, about what to do, not just with PLAs, but other types of bid specifications. And the problem is that because of the nature of public bidding, as this case demonstrates, there will simply not be time to fully adjudicate those issues prior to the construction work having to begin. That is the essence of the problem here. We have been litigating this case for approximately a year. We've gotten through a preliminary injunction at the trial court level that has not been reviewed by this court. The SNWA case took 3 years to litigate. And of course, government agencies, including the county here, can't wait around for that amount of time to see whether what they're doing is acceptable or not.
How crucial is the jail problem?
Well, it's very crucial. I mean, we've got quite a bit of evidence in the record, a declaration from the Metro Chief, from the county's Division of Real Property Management, that this is an emergency project. That's why the county couldn't wait. They wanted to use a PLA on this project. They have directed staff to use a PLA on the next phase of this project. And were it not for the trial court's erroneous preliminary injunction here, they would have continued to use the PLA on this project. But time simply ran out, despite this court's efforts, despite, frankly, the efforts of the trial court to hear this case quickly. So we submit that this is a matter that the court should address. It's been fully briefed. the matters before the court.
So the ruling you're asking the court to make in this case is to adopt all of the idiosyncratic provisions as a matter of law?
Your Honor, the ruling that we're asking the court to make is to vacate the preliminary injunction and to rule that the trial court abused its discretion in both the standard that it adopted and in ruling in this instance that, and on the evidence for the trial court, that the three provisions it deemed unfair to bidders violated the competitive bidding statutes. Whether in the future, in a different case, there are wholly different provisions that come up, may happen. But we've got a PLA here that contains essential terms that are going to come up on the next phase of this project, and there simply won't be time to review them. Second, we've got a standard applied by the trial court here that is totally beyond what the competitive bidding statutes say. This court has said several times in Gulf Oil and SNWA, the sole question here under the competitive bidding statutes is, does this particular bid specification benefit the taxpayers? The trial court here said, looked at this PLA, realized that with this PLA, when this project was originally bid out, without a PLA, in late 2010, 12 contractors responded with design-build proposals. When it was rebid several months later with a PLA, after concerns had arisen among the commissioners about the need for a PLA, 13 bidders submitted bids. There was an increase in interest in the project. Seven of those 13 bidders were non-union. So the trial court realized that the PLA didn't dampen competition on this project, didn't prevent non-union contractors from bidding. The trial court then looked at the second prong of the test under SNWA and Gulf Oil, which is, does this save public funds? And the court said, yes, this does save public funds. It saves public funds, one, because there's a legitimate concern that the county has about labor unrest on this project interfering with the timely completion of the project, creating substantial costs for the county in terms of outsourcing laundry and kitchen facilities, and creating the potential for an emergency situation in which a prisoner evacuation has to take place.
If it's your position that we're semi-bound by certain tenets of the SNWA case, in this particular case, why is it inappropriate the district court take information that wasn't provided to the county commission?
Well, Your Honor, we don't think it was at all, and we participated in the evidentiary hearing that the trial court held under protest. The approach that the trial court took here encourages bidders to boycott the process. Despite, I think, a total of six or seven public hearings on this, quite a bit of information supplied to the Board of Commissioners, the respondents here did not submit any evidence showing that any of the provisions that the trial court thought were unfair would prevent them from bidding on the project, were unfair to them in any way, created any problem to them. And then after the board had taken the action that it did, they ran into court on the eve of the contract being bid and or the bids being opened and asked the trial court to hold a new hearing on this. So we think it's a very dangerous standard, not just for project labor agreements, for any kind of bid specification.
To what extent was the trial court's order that you're now appealing driven by the prior order from this court in case 58365? And are you now arguing that there was error in that order that the en banc court as a whole should be considering?
Not at all, Your Honor. That first order was correct of the panel that heard the first case. The trial court, in its first hearing on the preliminary injunction, when it denied the preliminary injunction, in its order, the ultimate order that this court reviewed, simply said, I'm going to look at the terms of this agreement, and I'm going to look at the SNWA terms. Hey, they look the same. The PLA's fine. And this court rightly said,
not the whole court.
Not the whole panel. Court. Thank
it was,
you, Your
but
Honor.
He said it was okay what he did.
This court, thank you, Your Honor. This court, two members of this court said, we're going to remand it for more detailed factual findings. We review these projects on a case-by-case basis, and we need some findings here that we can review. I went back to the trial court. The trial court made those findings. The county made those findings, explained the cost savings, not just from the only possible way of guaranteeing that there aren't labor disputes on the project, but other things like a wage freeze on the project, access to apprentices, other types of efficiencies, found that the economic environment created a real risk of jurisdictional disputes on the project and of labor disputes on the project, and issued a ruling compatible with the remand order. Ironically, the trial court then went on to say, I'm going to look at the face of these terms, you know, the hiring hall provision, the core employee provision, and I think they're unfair to bidders. Without any evidence, it was, as respondents have admitted, it was based solely on the facial text.
So the standard of review that you're advocating for in this appeal does not differ from what was ordered on the previous remand. To wrap it up.
It does not, Your Honor, no. And we submit that the trial court's decision, up until he got to the guards against favoritism, fairness to bidders standard that he created, was correct and was supported by substantial evidence. We're going to reserve 5 minutes of our time. I'm going to
say. Let me just ask you this. As far as the law of this case with the previous order of July 1st, as you said, my understanding was we were just going to send it back for factual findings to be made, period, end of story, you know, like that, get that done and get that evaluated. So you're saying the judge just went beyond that, you know, when it got to him and put in some, made, considered matters outside the record, so to speak, then as far as and what he did.
Sort of, Your Honor. In fact, there was no evidence, not even evidence outside of the record, but there was no evidence at all supporting his conclusion that these terms that he didn't like were unfair. Even if that could be squared with the competitive bidding statute, which asks only, are the taxpayers benefiting from this? I'll give one example and then I'll cede the podium. The trial court found that the requirement that bidders agree to pay into joint labor management benefit funds was unfair because, in his opinion, some bidders might have their own benefit funds, and this created potentially the possibility that they might have to pay two different benefits. There was absolutely no evidence in the record that any contractor faced this issue. And in fact, the affidavits that respondents submitted, the only word from them, from actual contractors about what this case was about to them, didn't even mention having to pay benefits as an issue. So it wasn't simply that there was the judge went beyond the record, although the judge did. The judge held an evidentiary hearing. There's no evidence in any record to support the conclusion that these terms are unfair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Nielsen, on behalf of Clark County.
Thank you, and may it please the Court. Leslie Nielsen, representing Clark County. As counsel for Clark County, I'd like to focus on showing that the county's process in adopting this project labor agreement was thorough, open, reasoned, and appropriate under the standards both set by this Court in its July 1st remand order and under the SNWA case and the Nevada competitive bidding laws. And second, I want to show how the district court applied the wrong standard of review, as has just now been explained. And thirdly, I'll address how neither the district court nor its record contains any evidence whatsoever establishing any irreparable harm to the respondent's subcontractor members. May I point out specifically that we've been litigating throughout this case against two associations of subcontractors, and it wasn't until late in the afternoon on August 15th during the preliminary injunction hearing that the names of redacted subcontractors were provided to us. But there was no affidavit that came along with those lists that established what interest those subcontractors had in this process. They were merely lists of subcontractors for purposes of establishing associational standing. So they, as I'll explain, they did not explain how they were being harmed by the use of the project labor agreement in this case. The county process, we actually had five public hearings before the board decided to use the project labor agreement. The board took testimony from county staff and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department staff on the project, and we heard from contractors and union representative community groups, members of the public, and even counsel for respondents spoke during the March 15th public meeting, and all he made were legal arguments to the board and provided absolutely no concerns of any of the subcontractor members of respondents as to how this project labor agreement would affect them. There was plenty of an opportunity from the February 1st meeting when the board first considered adopting the project labor agreement through July 19th when they reaffirmed their decision to use the project labor agreement. There was plenty of opportunity for the respondents to have their own study performed to determine whether all the project labor agreements being used on public sector projects were providing the benefits of reducing costs and making sure that projects were, in fact, being completed on time and on budget. After we received the court's July 1st remand order, the county wanted to be sure that use of the project labor agreement was appropriate under the remand order, so we asked our expert, Mr. Bradford Koop, to perform additional studies addressing specifically those concerns that this court had expressed in the remand order, and that was addressing the economic conditions and the Las Vegas job market, and whether overall there would be economic benefit to the taxpayers. And so his supplemental report was thorough, and it was provided to the board. The board considered that report, and on July 19th, decided to reaffirm the use of the project labor agreement. The most important finding that our board made, I think, was our finding number 35, which they found that the PLA promotes economic benefit to the taxpayers because it focused on preventing work stoppages, which of course is critical during a renovation project of a fully occupied detention center that is 28 years old and it's been operating 24/7 at capacity. A renovation project is complicated. There are 19 different crafts involved in this renovation project, and it's hard to predict what they're going to find once they have started work. That finding also established that it would provide greater access to cheaper apprentice labor for non-union contractors. It would freeze applicable union wage rates and impose uniform working conditions and improve safety and security on the project, which, of course, was a very big concern to our board on this project. So the district court never mentioned the board's findings, but it did agree that the project labor agreement would generally benefit taxpayers as required by the Gulf Oil and SNWA cases. So the district court, we would urge, applied the wrong standard of review. This court's remand order was very clear, and it directed the district court to examine only, quote, the PLA's terms and the factual context in which it was adopted, with emphasis, of course, on the specific project, the labor market, and the economic climate. And also, just briefly to respond to Justice Hardesty's question with respect to the mootness issue, may I point out that what we're asking for here is a ruling just on this on the phase one aspect of this project, which was initially contemplated to be a $27 million phase of a larger $106 million project. So we're actually asking for a ruling on the record as it exists with respect to phase one. We're not asking you to bless use of this project labor agreement on phase two.
I guess that begs the question, since the contract's been issued on phase one, wouldn't a ruling by this court recognizing what you're requesting be moot? Phase one's been contracted out. I kind of understand the argument of your colleague that maybe a ruling of this court that clarifies the standard of review used by a district court judge in examining the record may need some clarification. But I'm not sure that the ruling of the court, this court, approving what the county did in phase one isn't rendered moot by the contract. Why isn't that the case?
Well, we acknowledge that the project labor agreement should be considered on a case-by-case basis. But if the court accepts our arguments, if we have a decision with respect to use of the project labor agreement on phase one, then our board would perhaps feel more comfortable and also ask perhaps for an updated study or for additional legal advice from counsel with respect to whether use of the similar project labor agreement would be appropriate under the competitive bidding statutes on phase two.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the order, because you're right. The order was specific. The order said the role of the district court judge is not to say we compare the agreement in SNWA with the agreement today and supposedly it's okay. It's to examine the agreement in the context in which it's been approved, in the context of the rule of law enunciated in the case. And none of that was present in the record in front of the panel. So we just said, look at those things. And your point is that the county commission then adopted those findings, which the district court should have reviewed in that context.
That's correct.
Okay.
And you believe, Ms. Nielsen, just to follow up, I guess, as original panel members here, thinking back to that process, you feel that the county commission, what they did, complied with the remand order of July 1st?
Absolutely.
Okay. Justice Peregrine had a question.
Well, I just have a concern that whatever we do is simply advisory, because the contract has been let without a PLA, and you're essentially seeking an advisory opinion from us.
Well, Justice Peregrine, we, as I mentioned, phase one of this project was originally contemplated to be a $27 million phase, and the facts are going to be very similar, and so
it would be advisory as to phase two.
Well, I don't think it would be any different than looking to the SNWA case in being able to rely on that case when we adopted the project labor agreement as to phase one. If you're to decide this case today favorably to appellants, then we would simply look to whatever decision you render and give legal advice to our clients accordingly. So I don't believe it'd be advisory at all. I think that it would assist the county in knowing whether it can go forward on the phase two using the same or similar project labor agreement.
Well, in giving that advice, counsel, then it might be helpful for you to have a direction from the court as to what district court judges are supposed to do when they look at these.
Absolutely. And may I point out,
do you not already have that in the order of remand?
Pardon?
Do you not already have that in the order of remand?
Really?
Perhaps we do.
You thought you did.
May I say, with respect to the district court applying the wrong standard of review, it really defies logic that our board would have abused its discretion on July 19th when it reaffirmed the project labor agreement based on expert testimony that it hadn't even heard, that expert testimony that wouldn't be provided until a month after the board's decision. Then with respect to the, I'd like to point out, too, that the members of our, of respondents, the two associations, are subcontractors. And the, in the district court's order, there is no mention whatsoever of what irreparable harm the subcontractor members would suffer. And not only is there no mention of what specific irreparable harm they would suffer, but there's no ability whatsoever to balance hardships. We don't know what the hardship is that's being suffered by these, by the members of respondents. So on this basis, we would ask the court to reverse the district court. We believe that he abused his discretion in applying the wrong legal standard under the SNWA case and the remand order, and the wrong standard of review by entering an injunction in the absence of any evidence of harm to the named subcontractors.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Nielsen. Mr. Parker, I'm going to give you 33 minutes, and I'll give Mr. Moore 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Mr. Parker, as you approach, I have two questions that I'd like you to answer as you choose. Number one, would you please tell us how you believe your client, buying through the district court order, has shown the necessary requirements for a preliminary injunction to be granted? That is what Ms. Nielsen just pointed out as she concluded, and that is that there was no irreparable harm shown and that there was no balancing of the hardships. That's question number one. Question number two, either support or distinguish your case pursuant to the Associated Builders versus Southern Nevada Water Authority.
All right. Can I take number two first?
Your choice.
Thank you very much. Again, Theodore Parker on behalf of the respondents. Good morning, Justices, early afternoon. The Southern Nevada Water Authority case, which I believe none of the parties here have suggested to be overturned, I thought provided clear instruction to not only public bodies, but to the court in terms of what's required before a PLA could be used. And I thought that the order issued by the panel with, of course, Chief Justice Cherry dissenting, was very instructive and simply followed and perhaps clarified Southern Nevada Water Authority case, further instructing the district court that he must use the Southern Nevada Water Authority enumerated factors as the backdrop in considering a PLA for any project, case by case, terms by terms, economic times by economic times. And that's what the court did. The district court made the mistake initially by simply looking at the similarity of the PLA used in the Southern Nevada Water Authority case versus the one that's being used here. And when that happened, we, of course, approached the court and appealed that issue. The court made the right decision, we believe, in vacating the order and remanding with the instructions we discussed. What I found to be also very persuasive, and something I would direct Justice Slater to look at, is footnote number 3 on page 4 of the order. And Justices Givens and Hardesty indicate here, footnote 3, we note that consistent with the discussion in Associated Builders, which I call the Southern Nevada Water Authority case, evidence that the PLA is consistent with the purpose of saving public funds need not place a dollar amount on the expected savings. Nevertheless, the county and court must make findings. Findings require actually evidence, a consideration of evidence, sufficient to make a determination that the factors required in the Southern Nevada Water Authority case have been met. Supported by evidence and a record, requires a record, a transcript of a record, which initially we had no transcript. And then finally, the PLA will promote economic benefit to the taxpayers. Now, what happens quite often in the appellant's arguments, they try to disguise the standard that I believe to be clear with this new standard, they call it, a novel standard of a fairness standard that Judge Weiss created. It's not a fairness standard he created. This is simply the standard that's existed since Southern Nevada Water Authority was determined in 1999. Part of it is to prevent favoritism. Now, I did something which is fairly rudimentary, something I see that we do in trial courts often, I've seen Mr. Posenberg do. I simply went to Black's Law Dictionary and looked at fair versus favoritism. And in favoritism, it mentions is to promote fairness, prevent bias, or to impart impartiality. That's all he did. That's all the district court did here. In order to ensure that there was no favoritism being given to the 32% of laborers and contractors, union contractors, he made sure that it was also fair and showed no favoritism.
But the PLA he saw the first time is the same PLA he saw the second time.
And when he used...
He read it both times.
Exactly, but he didn't know the first time that he shouldn't use a similarity of PLA standard.
But
the
Mr.
second
Parker,
time, after instruction from the court, he actually applied the factors enumerated in the Southern Nevada Water Authority case. And that's what he was directed to do, and that's what he did.
But the argument on this appeal is that in examining the favoritism factor, he went outside the record. He did not look at any evidence that was presented to the county. The problem in the original case, we didn't have any transcripts or any record. It seems as though there isn't anything in the record to support the three arguments that he used here to find an abridgment of or a creation of favoritism. Where in the record in front of the county are the findings of the judge on page
13, Justice Hardesty?
On page 13, the record on appeal 1369 supported and 1370.
The findings, Your Honor, I'm sorry, Justice Hardesty on page 13, come directly from the PLA that they were attempting to use. The PLA requires, as a part of its provision, this Core 7 employee requires that a union or non-union, especially a non-union contractor, can only use up to 7 of his core employees, which in effect would mean that employee number 8, 9, and 10, having worked at subcontractor X's office for 10 years, has a family, have a relationship, they know how this person will work, will not be able to work on that project. Because after 7 core employees, they have to go to a union hall and pull union, potentially union laborers, into their office and into their subcontractor.
Mr. Parker, it's the next sentence on lines 25, 26, and 27 that are troubling. That fact, referring to the 7 core employees, that the fact that additional employees must be hired from the union hall seems to put non-union workers at a disadvantage. And with respect to the 7 core employees, he says, seems to be a number and restriction without a basis. But where was there a record presented to the county in which the county could have accepted or rejected this notion? There is nothing in that record, is there?
That's a great question, Justice Hardesty. And the reason why I believe it's good, not to say that for your own reasons it's not good, but the reason why I believe it's really insightful is because the SNWA case requires that those factors be considered to make sure that everyone, including a public body, has looked at those factors before they decide on the PLA. Now, there is no evidence in the record, but the Southern Nevada Water Authority case requires a record. There has to be a record before you make that decision to in any way restrict complete competitive bidding. But that's what our statutes provide for. And so the only way to be able to determine if a public body has truly considered the factors of the Southern Nevada Water Authority case is to have that record. Now, what we do have is the Beryl Dana report. The Beryl Dana report was issued on March 1st. On February 1st, and I apologize, Justice Sada, I'm truly going to come back to your first question. On February 1st, the county made a decision to use a PLA. Now, I made an appearance at that proceeding, at that commission hearing, and I said, commissioners, you're making this decision, but the case law says you have to consider these factors before you make this decision. You put the cart before the horse, and you have to abide by that case law. And I actually cited the Southern Nevada Water Authority case on the record for their benefit. Yet they still made that determination without considering the economic conditions, the labor conditions, any of the other things, and the favoritism, improvidence, corruption, none of those things have been considered. Yet they made a political decision that they wanted a PLA to be used. 30 days later, unlike the Southern Nevada Water Authority case, where the Southern Nevada Water Authority took 15 months to vet all of these considerations. And the court in that case, in the Southern Nevada Water Authority case issued in 1999, went through and discussed the record that the Southern Nevada Water Authority actually made in terms of those considerations. 30 days later, the Clark County gets an opinion, which Darrell Dana from Washington, D.C. issued this opinion saying that we're not sure. The conclusion of this report is we're not sure that a PLA is proper for this project because the labor conditions are not the same as they were in 1999. There's an abundance of skilled laborers without work. We have a depressed market as opposed to a market where we are struggling to find help. We have a depressed market where we have an abundance of contractors, generals, and subs. That's a full record. That's a record required under the Southern Nevada Water Authority. We don't have that record here. And when the court, this panel, issued its order vacating the order and remanding for the district court's consideration of those factors, finally, that's what the district court did because that record was deficient in terms of the factors required under the Southern Nevada Water Authority. So when Justice Hardy, see, when you ask me, where is it in the record? The absence of the record is conspicuous. The absence of those considerations being factored in by Clark County is what's discussed here in the order.
Five public hearings, and it's not in the record, is what you're saying, five public hearings.
Exactly, Justice Cherry. Now, in reading your dissent, Justice Cherry, which is only a paragraph long, I agree. The project is important. But the project was stalled for 7 months before they decided, because they wanted to try to use a PLA.
But this stuff is what frustrates our people in this state.
I agree.
When this happens. I mean, this is an emergency situation. If they have to evacuate that jail, our regional justice center is right next to it. The judge's parking lot is viewed from the jail. And it's an emergency situation, Mr. Parker.
But with or without a PLA, it's a project that can go forward. Why stall it? If it's an emergency, Justice Cherry, why stall it for 7 months trying to get a PLA used? This court is known. I have tried and come before this honorable court on many occasions on public works projects that are done successfully every day of the year without PLAs. In fact, Darrell Dana's own report indicated for the last 10 years there have been no new PLAs, only extensions of prior PLAs. It's not like a public works project like the detention center requires a PLA. This was a politically motivated determination made without any evaluation of the Southern Nevada Water Authority enumerated factors, done without the benefit of the report, a decision made 30 days before the report was even issued. If that's not arbitrary and capricious, I don't know what is. You make a decision before you even have a report? And to add insult to injury, if we were to look at the opposition to our motion to dismiss for mootness sake, I would direct the court to the September 20th transcript of the Clark County Board of Commissioners. And agenda item 64 is a determination whether or not the board is going to use or seek to use a PLA for phases 2 and 3. The board decides, and this goes a little bit to what we're talking about, a case-by-case basis to determine the appropriateness of using a PLA. It says here on page, page 5, and Commissioner Sisolak is speaking. And he says, I'm paraphrasing, everyone here wants to get an answer from the Supreme Court on this PLA, one way or the other. So I don't want to give that up. If we have to start back and move with the challenge on phase 2, then at least we get this important, crucial phase underway, and we are able to move forward under Randy's expedited timeline. Mary Ann Miller, the district attorney, says, if there's a consensus from this board that they want staff to proceed with the PLA, if there's a decision from the Supreme Court for phase 2 and phase 3 and beyond, then I think you have preserved your standing. I read that into the record because the next comment from Commissioner Brown says, I would agree wholeheartedly if that keeps the standing. I think the board has expressed their intent from the get-go that this would be a PLA-driven project. Now, that's what this court and SNWA indicated to public bodies. You don't make these decisions based on politics. That's not one of the enumerated factors in the Southern Nevada Water Authority case. These commissioners decided from the get-go, to use their words, that the PLA would be used without having had an evaluation done by an outside consultant, by not having an evaluation done internally, where any of these factors were considered. You have a dearth of a record required by the Southern Nevada Water Authority case in order to use a PLA and constrict our Nevada bidding statutes. That's what we have here. Now, what I also take from this commentary between the commissioners and Mary Ann Miller, counsel to Clark County, is that this was a manipulation of their own board to manipulate whether or not they would have standing for this appeal, the current appeal, because they knew Phase 1 had already been awarded. And under the recent 2010 case, late 2010 case by this court, and the UMC Orion case, once you've let the project out, once you've awarded the project under the terms of the bidding specs, you can't go back and change in the middle of the project. That's it. And so this is truly an advisory opinion, so as Ms. Leslie Nielsen said, so she can advise her client. This is just in terms of the mootness issue. There is no live controversy. There's nothing left to affect the reason why the injunction was issued in the first place.
Mr. Parker, excuse me, go ahead.
I guess in response to that real quickly, what about the exercise of the district court in this particular matter? We sent it back. We informed the district court what we wanted done, the court speaking. And did they do that?
I think the court did. I'm sorry, Justice. I believe the court did exactly what it was instructed to do. In fact, originally, in preparing my office,
Within that question of the court doing what it was intended to do, I guess the question is, if the court took new evidence, that would seem that evidence wasn't offered, say, in rebuttal to the county commission when they made their findings of fact from the experts. Is that a
proper
analysis or not, in terms of was that submitted to the county commissioners at the time the other report was submitted for their consideration, or was this, in fact, new material?
Now, the material, the actual cross-examination, perhaps, of Mr. Koop of Vero Dana may have been new in terms of the cross-examination. The lack of evidence became apparent during during that evidentiary hearing, but it was never there. And that's why the court, in its decision...
Was there any attempt by the group that you're representing to proffer that to the county when they were accepting the other report or the report was put on their agenda?
When I first, as I said before, Justice Douglas, the first time I appeared before them in February, I indicated, and I said it to each of the commissioners, as if I'm standing there right now, you have to comply with the Southern Nevada Water Authority case and the factors stated in that case. That's all they had to do. They didn't do that. They didn't comply.
Well, Mr. Parker, to follow up on Justice Douglas's question, if I may, it may be that they didn't comply earlier. The question now presented, if the court considers this case not to be moot, is whether the supplemental report and the supplemental proceedings in July before the county commission resolve the deficiencies that existed before.
No, they didn't, Your Honor. And the reason why I say that is because the supplemental report was done in July. The evidentiary hearing was done in August. In fact, I was in trial and had to take part of the trial day off to do the evidentiary hearing. And at that point, with their supplemental information, their experts still could not develop the record required under the Southern Nevada Water Authority case. And I'll give you an example. On page 3 of this court's order, remaining back to the district court, it says, the district court considered the PLA's language, but it did not review the factual circumstances of the project, the Clark County labor market, or the prevalent economic conditions. All of these factors impinge on whether a PLA for this project at this time and place serves the taxpayers' interest. Now, I thought that was a very important part of this order because it complements the Gulf Oil case. And the Gulf Oil case stood for the proposition that challenging the county's decisions is compatible with the public interest since it serves to force compliance with the purpose of the competitive bidding statutes and procedures. And that's what this panel did by remanding this case to the district court. Now, this is the information that still was lacking in the record when we went to the evidentiary hearing. The seven core employees, as I discussed earlier, would require a non-union contractor to go outside beyond seven and bring in union laborers.
Or well, is that exactly what it said? Just to clear this up, that's not necessarily...
When I say union laborers, I'm sorry, Justice Peregrine, laborers through the union hiring hall.
And that they're not all necessarily union
laborers? Not necessarily.
Laborers. Okay, I just want to make that clear.
The point being is that the arbitrary decision to use seven was never developed in a record. It was seven used in terms of the Southern Nevada Water Authority PLA. And perhaps a record was developed enough to determine why seven was the appropriate number. But seven was never developed in this record at all. It doesn't talk about the size of the subcontractors, for example. If you look at some of the other cases, the New Jersey cases, the Massachusetts cases, they all talk about the arbitrary decision in terms of core numbers, the use of hiring halls, and dual benefits. What they also talk about, which I thought, again, there's no record here, and it's, again, why this court found, as it did, there's no explanation why non-union contractors beyond seven core employees would have to go to a hiring hall. There's no reason to support why they could not use other labor forces available. Keeping in mind, 62% of all laborers in construction companies are non-union. So what we're doing is we're favoring the 32%. And so what the judge did in finding this lack of information to develop why the core seven employees was necessary, found that Southern Nevada Water Authority case was not being complied with. And that's what that was the direct mandate from this court. You have to use that case as a backdrop to determine whether or not this PLA for this project is appropriate. That's what he did. That's what Judge Weiss did. And he kept with Gulf Oil. Gulf Oil is a 1978 case, but it's cited quite often. It was cited in Bud Mahas. It's cited in the Richardson cases that I tried. And that's the only way, because that's the responsibility here of this court, is determining the compliance with the Nevada bidding statutes and, of course, with Nevada statutes, in this case, case law, because there is no particular statute that directly says a PLA can be used. What they're using, simply the appellants are using, is Nevada statutes that say that in a design-build context, the public owner can decide the specifications. But typically those specifications talk about sole source equipment or materials or provider of materials or equipment.
Mr. Parker, if one credits your argument that the Sunwalk case can be read to require a record developed on each term within the PLA, my understanding of the supplemental report was that it essentially blessed the provisions and addressed each of the various factors. No evidence was presented to the County Commission that there was a favoritism issue in their hearing created by the seven core employees. But more importantly, there's nothing in the district court proceeding that offers any evidence that that provision is a unfavorable or creates favoritism. So do we have a situation where the district court judge is substituting his or her judgment for that of the county that elects to use the PLA?
No, Justice Hardesty, and I appreciate the depth of that question. First and foremost, the district court, in applying Southern Nevada Water Authority case, looked at each factor. Favoritism, of course, is one of them. Saving taxpayers money and so forth. In order to determine whether or not the PLA was appropriate for this project, it had to look at the provisions of the PLA. Now, something that I found, and I appreciate the question because it allows me to remark on something said by the appellants, for the union. He said that his client insists on the use of this core 7 employee provision of the PLA. He used the word insist when discussing that issue. The core 7 employee issue does not affect cost. When I say cost, it's not a demonstration that it's going to save taxpayers' money. What it is something that the unions want to ensure that their union laborers get an earlier shot at working for perhaps a non-union company.
But with Justice Perigary's clarification, the 7 core employees could be non-union, and then out of the hiring hall, there could be umpteen non-union employees. We don't know.
What was developed during the record, and the court probably saw this in the transcript of the evidentiary hearing, from my cross-examiner, Mr. Cook, Vero Dana, he admitted that in all likelihood, the people that are now a part of the hiring hall, because it's first come, first in, first out, would have a preference. Those are union
And maybe
laborers.
It wouldn't be if we didn't have 12% unemployment.
That's number one, Justice Cherry. The other thing he pointed out, the favoritism, is union contractors associated and accustomed to using union hiring halls would have an insight into what laborers, perhaps they've used before or not used before, would be better suited for their projects, where non-union contractors who don't use hiring halls won't have that same familiarity. He pointed that out. Now, these are things that were not disputed by Mr. Koop during cross-examination. It's simply a demonstration of how lacking this record was and why the instruction by this panel was so important for the district court. Now, if you were to look at Vero Dana's report, Vero Dana said there were several factors that did not vote in favor of a PLA. Vero Dana, their own expert, said, because of the economic times here, this does not support a PLA, because we have the overabundance of skilled laborers, because of the size of the project. Typically, PLAs are used for much larger projects, more complex projects. This is not a complex project. It's not a very large project in the scheme of public works projects. And he said that didn't bode in favor of a PLA. And, in fact, what I found to be very very helpful is that in Vera Dana's report, Mr. Koop says he recognizes the factors under the Southern Nevada Water Authority case that have to be met, questions whether they have met, and said a record has to be developed by the public body of these factors. And yet it was not done. And it probably was not done because this report was hastily put together in less than 30 days as compared to the 15 months it took for the Southern Nevada Water Authority agency to do it. If I could, and I apologize, in terms of the harm, Justice Sata, we put in an affidavit, and what has happened now is they've given you pieces and parts of our affidavits. Initially, we submitted an affidavit outlining why we believed our clients would be harmed if the PLA was used, that several of our clients would not bid on this project because of the PLA mandate, because most of my clients didn't want to have to lay off Joe and John, who may happen to be core employee number 8 or number 9. They didn't want to have to do that. They didn't want to have to be able to subject their companies to a situation where they didn't know the people they were bringing in from the union hiring halls, how they would perform. They didn't want to take the responsibility, perhaps, of putting someone in that they had no familiarity with in terms of their qualifications and abilities to do the level of work that Joe and John, employee 8 and employee 9, could do. They didn't want to sacrifice the efficiency of their core group, not knowing who they were going to get from the union hiring hall. And as a result, they felt at a completely competitive disadvantage, which is what Judge Weiss found as well, because of that requirement in the PLA. Additionally, we put that affidavit together, and then because several of my clients were a little concerned about how their treatment out in the community by union contractors, and some of them can be, all contractors can be vociferous, union and non-union, but they were a little concerned. And so they didn't want their names out because they also didn't want Clark County to perhaps use it against them. So it wasn't until the end that when the judge asked us for names that we gave an affidavit giving the list of names. And that's why we have not just one affidavit, but more than one affidavit. And we, of course, posted the $50,000 bond as a part of the injunction proceeding. One other thing I wanted to mention in terms of the mootness, if I could. In most of the cases that deal with the exception to the mootness requirement, they talk about the timing of actually having something resolved fully. Well, in this case, Clark County controls and determines the timing. And the reason I say that is because they started the detention center project specs in 2009 by hiring JMA. It's 3 years later, and this issue has come up. They have the ability to decide when they're going to bring a project forward, when they're going to start the design process, when they're going to actually put the specifications out for bid. And on a project like this that took 3 years, if they had indicated the PLAs used from the beginning, this could have been completely adjudicated by this time. This court has been wonderful, I would say, in giving us expedited briefing. The district court gave us expedited hearings. And we've done all of this in less than a full year from the first hearing we've had in this case. The other cases that they've mentioned don't stand for the proposition that they're asserting now. In fact, Big D Contractors, one of the cases they cite, that case is an Arizona case that deals with the exception that we're speaking of, the capable of repetition yet evading review. What's different in that case is, I wanted to point this out, Arizona does not have the same constitution that we have in Nevada. It does not have the same mootness requirement issue in terms of this Supreme Court hearing moot cases. Our constitution is very similar to the federal constitution in terms of Article 6, Section 4, where if it's moot, we don't give advisory opinions here. Nevada doesn't have that same article section in their constitution. I'm sorry, Arizona does not, as Nevada does. The other cases they deal with, typically those are statutory interpretation questions. It was not a question of a process or a case law requirement. None of them. The other cases they cite deal, one dealt with a guardianship of a child needing a blood transfusion, and the parents, for religious reasons, Jehovah's Witnesses, didn't want the blood transfusion to happen, and they said that was capable of repetition, and that was decided as it was a proper exception to the mootness requirement. But there's not a single case that they cited that are actually on all fours when it comes to this mootness issue. The other thing I would mention is that Clark County, I believe, played fast and loose with this litigation tactics. And I'm trying to find softer words to use. But Clark County objected to our request that this court consider that Clark County agreed to spend an additional $347,000 for a PLA compliance agreement, something you wouldn't need if you didn't have a PLA. They object to us putting that transcript into record. But then when it's advantageous to Clark County, when it's perhaps convenient to their arguments, they then attach the transcript from the September 20th board hearing, when we've asked for the September 6th board hearing to be submitted. And then we, of course, evaluate that transcript, and we find that Clark County made decisions already for Phase 2 and Phase 3 to use a PLA, again, without an evaluation or a consultant's report or anything else. If those decisions aren't arbitrary and capricious, lacking completely of the considerations under Southern Nevada Water Authority, I don't know what are. I don't know what would be. Both of those decisions. And that's where we're here now. We're here with this court trying to decide if it should change Southern Nevada Water Authority, which I believe it should not, change a decision, its remand order, which I think is clear, and render an advisory opinion on a project that's already been started. It's admitted to the demolition's already been started. It's admitted that the project was done without a PLA. The UMC Orion case requires that it go forward as bid and as awarded. There's nothing left to decide in this case. Unless there are any other questions, I appreciate your time, Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Mr. Moore, 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be quick on a number of subjects. I first want to correct some of the inaccuracies that were a part of opposing counsel's presentation. I encourage the court, as it always does, to look thoroughly at the record here. I'll mention one of them. Counsel represented to the court that the Verrill-Dana study, the initial Verrill-Dana study, concluded that the current economic climate did not support using a PLA on this project, and that there were questions about whether the standards set forth in SNWA were met. Here's record page 88. For most of the same reasons that prompted the court to approve the SNWA PLA, we believe a similar PLA containing the key elements of that agreement would suffice today and to meet the three interests underlying Nevada's competitive bidding laws. There was a transcript. There was a record before the Board of Commissioners in the first appeal. What we didn't have were findings of fact from the trial court to guide the panel through that record. Understandably, the panel voted to remand for more clarification. There was then additional findings, a supplemental report addressing each of these issues. But it's a misrepresentation to state that the initial Verrill-Dana study did not support using a PLA on the project. Now, let me talk about the guards against favoritism prong, because that is what's at issue here. The trial court, supported by substantial evidence, found that this project would benefit taxpayers, would save public funds, would secure competition. The guards against favoritism standard is not some free-floating equity standard. There is a statute, NRS 338.1401, that provides the basis for this. What does that statute say? It says that bid specifications may not be created that direct work to one particular concern. That's the standard this court applied in Georgia's equipment. This is not a test in which trial courts may go out and, based on their own assumptions, decide that provisions in bid specifications are unfair to particular bidders, to particular union or non-union workers. And then finally, I'll say something about the mootness issue. There is concern on the court about rendering an advisory opinion. Even if the court were to conclude that the fact that construction has not been completed, the fact that there is at least the possibility that the county could change course here and rebid the project means that the case should go forward, this case falls squarely within the problem this court has previously identified of cases in which there's an important public issue that should be resolved that cannot be resolved within the normal course of litigation. I'll leave it there, and I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Parker, Mr. Moore, Ms. Nielsen, thank you for your spirited arguments in this matter. This matter will stand submitted, and the inbound court is in recess until the call of the court.